NBC Monitor News on the hour. Here is William Littauer.
Another cutback of American military forces in South Vietnam is reported by sources in Saigon. According to the plan, 30,000 American Navy officers and men will be withdrawn over the next 9 months as part of President Nixon's reduction of U.S. military forces in Vietnam. The U.S. Naval Command Group will be deactivated. Only 5,000 men will be left in South Vietnam as an advisory force. The forces to be withdrawn operate on South Vietnam's rivers. In gearing up to replace the Americans, South Vietnam is expected to have a fleet of 500 river craft, most of them supplied by the United States. American B-52 bombers struck four target areas in South Vietnam. A number of ground actions were reported. In one, enemy elements destroyed 80% of a refugee camp on the coast 325 miles northeast of Saigon, killed eight civilians, and kidnapped 15 children from a nearby hamlet. South Vietnamese forces reported losing 10 men fighting off the attack. There was no report of progress at the Paris peace talks today, nor any evident change in North Vietnam's policy since the death of President Ho Chi Minh. North Vietnam rejected an American demand for international inspection of prisoner of war camps. Israeli and Egyptian aircraft were in the air over the Gulf of Suez, the fourth consecutive day of air action in the area. Israeli officials indicate more can be expected. A report from John Masterman, NBC News in Tel Aviv.
Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan declared Israeli forces will, as he put it, continue to assume the initiative in military operations. His statement was not a direct response to this week's Anglo-American criticism of Israeli actions on the Egyptian front, but Western diplomats may read into it that Israel means to keep Arab armies off balance at the cost of continuing charges of ceasefire violations. The Israelis said Israel's most famous soldier will make the choice of place and scope and intensity of new military operations. The Israeli army, Dayan said, will always find exposed and vulnerable points in Egypt for its strikes. The Israeli Air Force struck again today inside Egypt at targets identified as military along the Suez Gulf area hit by Tuesday's armor and infantry raid. A military spokesman said all planes returned safely. Dayan said these recent actions had this purpose, curbing the Egyptian escalation of fire. John Masterman, NBC News, Tel Aviv.
A grenade was thrown at the home of U.S. Army Attaché Robert Perry in Amman, Jordan. The explosive bounced off the home and caused little damage and no injuries. On Tuesday, a grenade was thrown into the pool of the British Embassy in Amman. There were no injuries in that incident either. Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare Robert Finch predicted today the Nixon administration will accomplish more school integration in the next 2 years than all the gains of the past 15 years. Speaking to a largely skeptical audience of black elected officials in Washington, Finch contended it will be more effective to impose court-scheduled deadlines and threaten termination of federal funds rather than to simply cut off funds to school districts that do not desegregate, a system he argued has not worked very well in the past.
There was no way in which a judge could enforce a general blanket order to desegregate. What was he going to do? He could put the local school board in jail, or the superintendent, and just if he put or cite them for contempt and thereby ensure their re-election for the rest of their lives in the local community. Or was he going to fine that district, which may have had trouble paying for the janitors or the school teachers? This gives us a meaningful weapon.
Finch's argument was greeted coolly by New York's Negro Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, who complained there is still no wholehearted commitment to the welfare of the black community, either in the administration or in Congress. A University of Wisconsin study group reports that legalization of marijuana could lead to more widespread use of hard drugs. Reporting on a survey of 800 students in Madison, Wisconsin high schools, Professor John Udell and Robert Smith say they found an alarmingly high proportion of those students using marijuana are also taking more dangerous drugs, such as LSD, speed, hashish, and opium. More in a moment.
David Frost here. Some people complain about the cold and personal world of computerization. They don't know that the State Farm Life Matchmaker Service uses a computer to match your personal needs with a life insurance program you can live with. Isn't it nice to know there's a computer with compassion?
For your life, your car, your home, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
British Army troops have completed construction of a 2-mile-long barbed wire wall between Protestant and Roman Catholic sections of Belfast, Northern Ireland. more troops were called for to boost the British peacekeeping force in Northern Ireland to about 7,000 men. The National Assembly of South Korea has approved a controversial constitutional amendment that will allow President Chung Hee Park to run for a third term in 1971. Once again, the hour's top story. Sources in Saigon report 30,000 American Navy men and officers will be withdrawn from South Vietnam in the next 9 months. William Littauer, NBC News, reporting.
Listen again on the hour when State Farm brings you NBC Monitor News. Kimosabe, Monitor. Sung late in the afternoon by Michael Allen. When it's early in the morning, I'm alive and I can feel it in me. traveling through the weekend world with Monitor. Do you shine your shoes on Saturday night before going out? How long before you have to shine them again? You want that shine to last 1, 2, 3 days long? Griffin Paste Wax does the job. It's a combination of waxes not found in any other polish. You pay a little less and you get a little more, a lot more shine with Griffin. Griffin, the shoe polish used by so many professional shoe shine parlors. It's actually America's number one shoe polish. Use Griffin for a Saturday night shine. Almost everyone who works in the White House seems to feel obliged to write a book about it after it's over. We've had accounts by housekeepers, chefs, private secretaries to presidents, well, just about everybody who can write his own name. Those who can't turn to ghostwriter Francis Spatz Layton. That's what Mary Borelli Gallagher did. She'd been Jacqueline Kennedy's personal secretary from the time she was a senator's wife and worked for her during the Kennedy years in the White House. The book is titled My Life with Jacqueline Kennedy. Edwin Newman interviewed Mrs. Gallagher for Monitor.
In your book, you make some warm and generous comments about Mrs. Kennedy, Mrs. Onassis, as she is now. But you also said some things that a number of people regarded as harsh, ungracious, and unnecessary. In the warmest and most generous spirit, I ask this question, which you might regard as harsh, ungracious, and unnecessary. Aside from making money, what are you trying to achieve with this book?
My main purpose in writing my book, My Life with Jacqueline Kennedy, is to offer it as my contribution to historians who I feel will find it absolutely significant in the way of studying the lives of our of the late President Kennedy and his family. Many books have been written, as you've just said, and since I did share a part of their of the Kennedy era, I feel that my recollections and my memoirs, along with the others that have been written, will provide a truer, a more complete and balanced picture of the family as a whole.
Mrs. Gallagher, you did not have any undertaking, did you, not to write about the Kennedys when you went to work for them?
No, I did not.
Were you ever asked anything about that
by them? No, I'll explain one aspect of this, which was my only experience on that score, was back in the presidential campaign, right shortly after the election, I believe it was, when Mrs. Kennedy asked that I bring some papers downstairs to have the help sign for her. And it was just like another piece of business of the day. Really, the afternoon was rushed and all, but like anything else, when she handed it to me, I accepted it and did as she said. And she explained that paper as being one which meant that we wouldn't write anything while we were working for them.
Mrs. Gallagher, there's a good deal of emphasis in the book on how Mrs. Kennedy expected those who worked for her to be available to her at all times, and she tended to be a bit peremptory in her, in the way she dealt with you. Was it always that way? Was she not a considerate person?
Well, I wouldn't say that she was not a considerate person. There were many times when she showed her consideration, and I try in some cases to point them out in the book, but there are reflections that come to mind that perhaps if they aren't in the book, at least I can talk about a little bit now. And for instance, I can recall on one occasion when she was preparing for the Black Watch, you might say, a ceremony that was to be held on the South Grounds about a week before we did leave for the Texas trip. And with getting ready and having to be out there with the president and all like that, she did take a minute to check with me as to whether or not I'd like to have my husband and the boys come in to Washington to watch this, and suggested that I send a White House car out to pick them up to bring them in. And I thought that was rather considerate of her to be, you know, taking a minute from what she was supposed to be thinking of on her own duties to be checking with me about having the rest of my family there to watch such an impressive thing.
Was she often that way?
Well, you see, Mrs. Kennedy and I, being mothers and having children, had something in common, I think, more than just a secretary to a public figure or an employer or anything like this. There was always this nice, close feeling I had with her because we shared many of the common interests that came with our children, like the time when she even asked me so that she could take a nap, would I watch over her children, Caroline and John? She said, you know, like, you be their mother, you know. And this way,
was that in the White House?
That was in the White House, yeah. She wanted me to have my boys come over and have dinner with the children, with Caroline and John, and then a movie afterwards. And she was always planning things like for the children in the way that on Wednesdays when she was in charge of them, that was the day when the governess was off. But Wednesdays, and she would always try to arrange something so that they would be happily occupied. Even though she couldn't be with them, if I could, I felt like this was another way I could be of service to her. You know, give her a chance to relax a little bit. And this, you know, lots of times I had the children come back to my house with me just so that they could spend a few hours of the day there and later bring them back when she was, you know, awake or ready to see them again, like that.
Mrs. Gallagher, were you surprised by the way Mrs. Kennedy held up after the assassination, by the way she carried herself?
Oh, I wasn't surprised. She has great dignity. No, I wasn't surprised at all because she has this determination about, you know, this perfect sense of presentation. She really does.
Thank you, Mrs. Gallagher. This is Mary Borelli Gallagher, author of My Life with Jacqueline Kennedy. This is Edwin Newman for Monitor.
And ends, followed in 1 minute by the Letterman on the Monitor Beacon.
You read the newspapers, listen to the newscasts, and maybe wonder what's going on in this country and in your own community. Problems, big and serious problems, needing action by local government and national government. But there's also another level of action, day to day, every day, in the local community services supported by your United Campaign. For years, these agencies have been helping homeless children, troubled teenagers, families in conflict, the lonely, the elderly, the sick and the handicapped, the mentally ill, the alcoholic, and the drug addict. For years, this network of community services has been helping people of all ages meet the daily crises of their lives, helping more people every year. These United Front agencies are more needed than ever in your neighborhood, in your community. Your gift is needed by your United campaign. Your one gift works many wonders, the United way. Give your fair share. It's only fair that you do.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
Here are the lettermen, as promised, with Hurt So Bad.
I know you.
Everybody's been saying all week in New York, how about those Mets? And while they're leading the pennant race, Joe Garagiola is going to look back at other seasons and other pennant races. That sports report brought to you by Kent Cigarettes.
What a good time.
Good times invented for the good taste of Kent, or was it the other way around? All we know is, wherever the good times are, millions of smokers are thinking, hey, what a good time for a Kent.
What a good time for a Kent.
Here's Joe.
The two pennant races in the National League have caused a lot of people a lot of futile work. I'm talking about the fans who sit down with a pencil and paper and try to figure out just what their team has to do to wind up on top. Forget the pencil, the paper, the slide rules, and the record books. The answer is simple. Win. In a race this close, it's the only answer that makes sense. Some people look at the number of games that were won by previous pennant winners. Forget it. One year, the Dodgers won the pennant with a total of 88 victories. Not only that, but two of those victories came in a playoff. Another year, they won 104 games and finished second. It's always been pretty much accepted that 100 victories should win a pennant, whether the schedule was 154 games or 162. Baltimore should do that this year in the American League's Eastern Division, but it's doubtful if any other club will reach the century mark. Speaking of 100 victory years, Casey Stengel had only one of them during the stretch where his Yankees won 10 pennants in 12 years. That was in 1954, when the Yankees finished second. As for Baltimore, they pretty much took all the interest out of their division race very early in the year. But let me save you a trip to the record book. The best year ever by a modern team was the 1906 Chicago Cubs. They won 116 and lost 36. I guess to those guys, this year's Orioles must have been fighting a slump all year. I was on a club that made baseball history by being in the playoff for the pennant. And the other day, I realized that this year there could be such a thing as two teams being in the playoff for the right to be in a playoff. This is Joe Garagiola from Monitor Sports.
Betsy Palmer, I want you to hear about my discovery. I had a beautiful experience recently when I sat in a Lazy Boy chair. I have never seen a reclining chair like this one. You'll fall in love with it. There are styles to match any taste and any decor. No matter which style you choose, you'll discover a harmony of beauty and craftsmanship that'll take your breath away. Lazy Boy reclining chairs are as graceful and luxurious as they are comfortable. Visit your Lazy Boy dealer today. Tell them that Betsy Palmer sent you.
And Abunda. In Helena, Montana, KBLL is the station that serves the area between Yellowstone and Glacier Park. Nice area. We'll be sending more Monitor all over the country after a brief timeout. Morgan.
Lunchtime. That's when my mom takes me to Redfish for lunch.
You mean your mom buys you Redfish hamburgers every day?
No, sometimes she gets me southern fried chicken and a chocolate Redfish thick shake. Sometimes I get fish and chips. Sometimes I have a Redfish cheeseburger and french fries. My mom treats me to a different Redfish food every day.
Gee. Do you think your mom can use an extra kid?
You love In Hempstead, Long Island, there's a Wetson's at 20 Hempstead Avenue. In Staten Island, a Wetson's is located at 1767 Forest Avenue. For the Wetson's nearest you, check the phone book.
This is the place, the Brad Crandall Place. Weeknights, 9 to midnight on WNBC. Radio 660, New York.
This is Mike Moss, WNBC News. It's 5:30, 83 degrees in New York and sunny. There's no report of progress from the Commodore Hotel, where the daycare council and its employees are trying to work out details of a new contract. The talks began about 2 hours ago. The daycare workers have been on strike for 12 days. The walkout has affected 12,000 children. The strikers want pay increases of more than 50%. John Markey, the conservative and Republican candidate for mayor, says New York City should get its fair share of any budget surplus the state might enjoy. Markey says the money should be used for hospitals and certain hard-pressed welfare categories. Governor Rockefeller has said the state will probably have a $35 to $40 million surplus at the end of the current fiscal year. Some anti-communist students staged two small demonstrations in Manhattan today. They were peaceful. 38-year-old Harry Jolly was flushed from his home in the Garrison Beach section of Brooklyn by tear gas today. Jolly barricaded himself in the house after a fight with his wife and fired several shots from the rifle and shotgun he had. No one was injured. Jolly, who recently quit his job as a newspaper linotype machine operator, refused to come out of the house despite the pleas of police and a priest. After police fired tear gas into the house for about an hour, Jolly ran from the building and surrendered. On Conference New York tomorrow evening at 6:05 on WNBC, Dr. Marion Hamburg of New York University is interviewed by WNBC News reporter Jim Iyer. The topic is drugs and a new program to help teachers know the symptoms of possible drug dependence or addiction.
Did you say you intend to employ ex-narcotics addicts or former narcotics addicts in the curriculum?
We probably will. We have in the past. And as a matter of fact, these addicts very often like to have this experience. I think you can say it's almost therapy for them as well as an experience for the class. And especially if the class has a chance to just sit down and have some give and take like you and I are having right now. It doesn't have to be a straight lecture, and certainly not one that is fear-producing of the old type of fear in terms of what will happen to you if you take drugs. But just sitting down and talking about, well, why I started in and what I thought then and what I think now. You know, I never thought anybody cared about me. That's one of the things they will tell you. Or I wanted to be a big shot in my community, and this group was taking drugs, and it seems like the thing for me to do.
Dr. Marion Hamburg of New York University interviewed about a new course for teachers. The program, Conference New York, will be heard tomorrow evening at 6:05 on WNBC Radio. Youngsters threw debris at signal stanchions along the Penn Central tracks north of the Mott Haven Yards in the Bronx today. The action disrupted the signal system on one track and delayed a freight train for half an hour. Penn Central commuter service was not interrupted. LaRue Hurd, a reporter on the staff of radio station WINS here in New York, has been killed in an automobile crash during her honeymoon in the Virgin Islands. Miss Hurd, who was 24, will be buried in her hometown, Detroit, Michigan, next Wednesday. She was married to Leroy Johnson of New York City a week ago. In sports, the Red Sox have beaten the New York Yankees up at Yankee Stadium. The score, 5-2 in the game between the Red Sox and the Yankees. The all-important game between the Mets and the Pittsburgh Pirates at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh leads the Mets 1-0. That game is now in the fifth inning. Here's the weather for tonight. Fair and mild, low in the low 60s. Sunny and warm tomorrow, the high 80 to 85 degrees. Tomorrow night will be fair and mild. More of the same on Monday. The chances of rain near zero tonight, 10% tomorrow, 10% tomorrow night. Right now, winds are west at 6 miles an hour. The humidity 45%. It's 83 degrees in New York and sunny. Again, the hour's top story, no report of progress in negotiations aimed at ending a 12-day strike by New York City's daycare center workers. Mike Moss, WNBC News. Now back to NBC's Monitor with Henry Morgan.
North or south, no east or west, just get in your car and you'll head for the best.
On saying, you know what the latest thing in jewelry is? Skate keys on a chain around the neck.
You remember skate keys from roller skating. You can get them enameled or gold-plated. A really smart fellow would want to give a lady the real thing. Plain old galvanized iron. Sure sounds more romantic. What I was going to say if I'd been here is it sure sounds more romantic than diamonds to me. And give her the roller skates to go with it. Music by the Hardy Boys. Love and Let Love.
Sometimes people don't believe a good thing when they hear it.
Well, it seems pretty hard to believe.
Believe it or not, golf dealers do it. Anytime you pull into a golf station that has a 10-second clock, you'll be greeted in 10 seconds or less. Golf knows you don't like to wait.
If they can really do it, it's pretty terrific.
It's Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, according to the ancient calendar. Here's a report on the celebration of this day from John Masterman, NBC News in Jerusalem.
It is Rosh Hashanah in Israel, the New Year, the year 5730 in the history of the Jewish people. The ancient shofar, the ram's horn, sounded in the revival of a custom dating to biblical times. Primarily celebrated as a religious holiday, but worshippers attending services were reminded of concerns more temporal and spiritual. Their handbags were searched for terrorist weapons. Guards watched over the throng of supplicants at Jerusalem's western wall of the Temple Court, the Great Wailing Wall, the most holy of Jewish holy places. Because of the recent skirmishes on the Egyptian front, a mood of greater caution prevailed. Some hotels reported holiday reservations canceled. Business was off in gift shops. In a message welcoming the new year, Prime Minister Golda Meir observed with satisfaction that the nation's development had continued unimpaired despite Arab attacks. She hoped for a better year ahead. Arab leaders, she said, must be beginning to realize that should they embark on a further war, they will again suffer defeat. The year of 5729 was a grim one because of the attrition of casualties, soldier and civilian, casualties comparatively higher for this country of 2.5 million than those suffered by the United States in Vietnam. So, on the Rosh Hashanah beginning the year 5730, the Jews of Israel persevere in concern and faith and eat traditional honey and honey cakes to symbolize their hope for a sweet year coming. This is John Masterman, NBC News in Jerusalem, reporting for Monitor.
Rosh Hashanah in Jerusalem, news, features, and news every weekend on Monitor. Now this message.
I'd like to share a couple of thoughts about a great beer, Miller High Life, brewed for over a century with the same care and dedication to real beer flavor. Miller makes it right. Hearty, robust, deep down good. Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee.
It's a long, long time from May to December, but the days grow short when you reach September. And the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, and one hasn't got time for the waiting game. But these few precious days I'll spend with you.
September song on the Monitor Beacon.
On Monday morning, Dick woke up. The mailman brought him a letter from grandmother. She said that she was sending him a present in a few days. Every day, Dick looked for the mailman, but the mailman didn't come. Dick was, worried. On Friday, a blue truck stopped at Dick's.
There are young people coming out of our high schools who can barely read. And if you can't read, you can't survive. You can do something about education through the New York Urban Coalition. Box 5100, Grand Central Station. Give jobs. Give money. Give a damn.
But he knew he was forbidden to open it until Christmas.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
Judy Collins on monitor with Chelsea Morning.
I woke up, it was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window, and the traffic wrote the words. It came ringing up like Christmas bells, and wrapping up like pipes and drums. Oh, won't you stay, we'll put on the day, and we'll wear it till the night.
Of the day's doings in the world of sports with Guy LeBeau. But first, this word from Alamite.
Hiya, Bunky. You say your car burns so much oil that two greedy Texas oil men sent you thank you notes. And it's smoking so much a fire truck is starting to follow you around town. And the power is so far gone you have to get out and boost the car over the cracks in the pavement. And if the jalopy doesn't last you through the year, you have to ride around on your kid's scooter. Is that what's bugging you today, cousin?
Well, never give up. Get that car whipped back into shape and nothing flat. All you need, Flippo, is a can of CD2 Red Label. I said CD2 Red Label, the oil additive specially designed by Alamite for cars that need a new lease on life. CD2 stops that oil burning, ends that smoking booby, gives your car that old get up and go. That's CD2 Red Label. Remember, friend, if your car can stop smoking,
you can too.
Now, here's Guy LeBeau with a day in sports.
Thank you, Henry Morgan, I think. This on the monitor scoreboard in baseball. Leading off with the American League, the Washington Senators beat the Detroit Tigers 11-6 in doing so, clinched the Eastern Division Championship of the American League for the Baltimore Orioles. But Baltimore will have a chance to win for themselves tonight as the Orioles play the Cleveland Indians. The Senator attack was led by Ken McMillan. He knocked in five runs with four hits, and that included a three-run home run. The Boston Red Sox downed the New York Yankees 5-2 at the stadium as Reggie Smith scored a couple of runs and drove in the tie-breaking run with a sixth-inning triple. Oakland shut out Chicago 4-0. That took 10 frames.
All other games underway or will be played tonight. Five former football greats were inducted into the Professional Football Hall of Fame today at Canton, Ohio. A crowd of about 3,000 watched as Joe Perry, Leo Nomellini, Ernie Stoutner, Earl Greasy Neal, and Albert Glenn Turk Edwards joined the ranks of some 34 other Hall of Fame members. It was the first year of eligibility, though, for Perry, Nomellini, and Stoutner. And the Pittsburgh Steelers have reinstated flanker Roy Jefferson. He was suspended on Thursday for missing a bed check. That incident happened in Montreal, where the Steelers beat the New York Giants 17-13 Thursday night, thereby creating the final condition which led to the firing of Giant coach Ali Sherman yesterday afternoon. In auto racing, Bruce McLaren and Dennis Holmey of New Zealand ran true to form today, won the first two starting positions for tomorrow's 120-mile race at Bridgehampton, Long Island. The New Zealanders have dominated the $1 million Canadian-American Challenge Cup Series all of this year's. And at Talladega, Alabama, the Professional Drivers Association has pulled its drivers out of tomorrow's inaugural Grand National Race. The drivers say that track is unsafe. Here's a couple of basketball notes. Cincinnati Royal coach Bob Cousy, the immortal one, says that he has asked permission now to become an active player again. If his request is granted, Cousy, who is 41, would be the oldest player to ever perform in the NBA, although not necessarily in all of professional basketball. And finally, Red Auerbach of the Boston Celtics says that the big Celtic star John Havlicek will stay with that team, despite a $1 million offer by the ABA, the American Basketball Association, to have him switch leagues at once. That's the scoreboard and sports on Monday the Sports. This is Guy LeBeau. Back to Henry Morgan.
later this evening, if you're driving, take Monitor with you. If you're not sure where to find it on your dial, write for our handy listening guide. Free. Tells you the dial settings for NBC stations all across the U.S. of A. Write Monitor, NBC New York, New York, 10020. Here's Anita Bryant.
Orange juice on ice is nice. Orange juice on the ice. Orange juice on ice is nice. It's refreshingly cooler naturally. Treat yourself to some real sunshine. Take a word of advice. Serve real Florida orange juice. Orange juice on ice. Take a 12-ounce can of fresh frozen orange juice from Florida and make a big pitcher full. Pour it over ice in a tall glass for a refreshing summertime cooler any time of the day. And remember, breakfast without orange juice is like a day without sunshine. Treat yourself to some real sunshine. Take a word of advice. Serve real Florida orange juice. Orange juice on ice, so nice. Orange juice.
Florida orange growers. And straight ahead, in that same direction, NBC News on the Hour. Henry Morgan for Monitor.
Now let's all string along with the All-American Banjo Team, another discovery in the Schaefer Talent Hunt.
About giving Schaefer beer a try? Well, don't. Give it two tries, because it takes two glasses to discover the unique quality of Schaefer, flavor that never fades, glass after glass. So try Schaefer, then try Schaefer again, and see why it's the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.